Have you ever been in a conversation with someone who just insists on their opinion, no matter whether they're right or wrong? It can be pretty frustrating. And in a group, it can make finding the right decision almost impossible. There goes your dinner plan, because after 20 minutes of arguing, everyone ends up settling for that pizza place around the corner that you already know is terrible. Now, a bad pizza is hardly the end of the world. But what if the same kind of stubbornness shows up in an AI system? When multiple AI agents are making decisions together, one agent refusing to back down can have some pretty serious consequences. That's what Samira Abedini looked into in her research. She discovered that AI agents might not behave all that different from us humans after all. So let's dive in. Welcome back to CISPA TLDR, the podcast of the CISPA Helmholtz Center for Information Security, where we talk about cybersecurity and AI without all the buzzwords. I sit down with the researchers behind the work to make sense of what they're doing. I'm Tobias Ebelshäuser from CISPA's communications team, and trust me, I'm not a computer scientist either, so I'm learning right along with you. Today we're going to talk about AI agents and how they arrive at decisions together. Turns out that decision-finding process can be hijacked and introduce some brand new security risks. Samira Abedini, master's student working at CISPA and soon to be a PhD candidate here, has looked into this topic, so I invited her here. Hey Samira, glad to have you on board.
Hi Tobias, thank you so much for having me today.
So to get us started on this topic, let's shortly talk about what an AI agent actually is and what it does. I think by now we've probably all interacted with one of these agents, but I'm sure you can give us a better idea.
Yeah, sure. So let me start with an example. We all have interacted with ChatGPT, for example. What we call a chatbot or chat assistant, we just write a question and then it gives us an answer. For example, if you want to go to a vacation and you want to have a plan for it, you ask the chat assistant, it gives you a plan. Okay, you can do this or you can do that. But in the case of AI agent, we have a broader perspective. Like this AI agent can look for websites, find hotels for you. Maybe if you give access to some calendar or your email, it can also add the time of vacation to your calendar. And it can track the progress of this search. And it has a memory. It can make decisions. So we have more autonomy in AI agents, I can say.
Mm-hmm. So ChatGPT is basically a very powerful agent that can do everything for you if you,
maybe not everything,
but a lot of things,
maybe we can say the OpenAI agent can do more things for you than the chat assistant, for example.
Yeah. Okay. And a chat assistant would be something like, I mean, you mentioned the travel example. If I go to an airline website, they usually have these, do you have any questions? And then it's also just like an AI agent, but it's basically customer service thing.
Yeah, exactly. With AI agent, we mean it can make decisions, it can have goals, it can track the progress of some tasks.
But in your paper, you focus on the idea of having multiple AI agents working together. So what would be the upside of something like that?
Yes, I think I look from human perspective here. The idea is similar to why we have group of people working on a task. And the same idea applies to AI agents, for example. One advantage is we can divide the tasks to some small parts and then do finish them in parallel. So the big task finish soon, we are faster. Or maybe like the humans, we have different perspectives when we are working in groups together, right? If we have heterogeneous agents in this multi-agent setup, each agent can come up from different perspective, then the outcome will be much better for us. Or also we can make each agent more specialized, for example, in coding agents. We have a specialized agent for writing the code, one to review the code, one to execute it, or one to search for websites and stuff. Making them specialized help us more, I think.
Mm-hmm. So you give each agent basically a more narrow field of expertise. So they basically have different strengths, as you would have in a human team.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But your paper also introduces the idea that if we have these several AI agents working together, that we might actually create new security risks that we haven't really thought about yet. So how did you first become interested in this problem?
Yeah, so I first came across the idea of different LLM stakeholders negotiating with each other with one paper by Sahar Abdennabi et al. And in that paper, it was about LLMs negotiating with each other, and they were analyzing if some competition happens in this negotiation. And then suddenly I thought, these agents are not just interacting with humans always. They maybe at some point they will interact with each other. Mm-hmm. And what happens if they interact with each other? Like this communication channel that we built to make the system more efficient or get some advantages out of it can also turn out to be the same channel to spread the vulnerability or some misinformation. So my interest started from that point.
So the idea is the more AI we get out there, the more AI takes over like human jobs, or not, let's not call it jobs, but tasks, the more they will also interact with each other instead of just humans versus humans with AI.
I can say it's going to be more hard for us to see what's happening behind. Like if some agents are communicating with each other to do a task, at some point, do we have enough time to read all the traces to see what my agent told your agent and the other agent? So yeah, this is the problem.
Okay. So tell us, what was the problem exactly? What did you find out? What could make a multi-agent system set up dangerous, let's say?
Yeah. So the main point of having this multi-agent setup was creating a communication between different agents and get the advantage out of it this way. But the same communication channel can use to spread some vulnerabilities, as I mentioned before, or some misinformations, for example. And the problem is the bigger the system becomes, just small kind of vulnerabilities will go through the whole network, and then suddenly it will become bigger and bigger. This is the main problem. Like, if one agent just starts to pollute its neighbor, then the neighbor will start to pollute its own neighbors, and this will go on in the network. This is the main problem, in my opinion.
Okay, so maybe let's take a step back. Like, please kind of describe your trial setup. You have different agents discussing a problem. What does it look like in practice? Like, what are they discussing? How can we imagine this as a non-scientific person?
So in the paper setup, we actually test different agents, different topology of networks, and different tasks. But tasks are from tool calling to selecting the best tool to call to some common sense question and answers. But let me give you an example with the common sense question answer. So imagine we have six agents. At the beginning, we give a question like, "What is someone who is jogging? What's trying to reach what's the goal for someone who is jogging?" And then each of the agents give an initial answer without any interaction with the other agents. And then after they have an answer, they have a reasoning why we chose this answer, and then they have the confidence, how confident you are in the answer. After that, they spread this information to their neighbors. They give the reasoning to their neighbors, and they save it to their memory. The next round, when the next round of deliberation starts, the agents get the answers of their neighbors, and also they have their own answer. So they have to see what's the situation. This was my opinion, and now this is another agent saying this. And they have to update their answer based on the neighbors and based on their own memory. And again, they come up with an answer, a reasoning, and then again spread to the neighbors.
Yeah.
And this goes so several times we have this communication happening.
Okay. At that point, one of the agents might have a wrong answer.
Yes.
Okay, and what happens then? So let's say, okay, in your example, like the main goal, common sense would be, okay, someone is trying to get fit, someone's trying to get to lose weight, maybe they are trying to yeah, they get want to get faster. Fitness is the goal, basically. So let's say one agent says the goal is to, I don't know.
To gain some pain.
To get larger feet, whatever.
Could be,
so,
yeah.
So what happens then?
So this is the main problem that we have. So, in the same task, we had options like, okay, this one person wants to become fit or healthier. But we also had options that we, the person tries to gain some feet pain.
Okay, yeah.
We had the we asked the attacker agent in the system prompt to defend this answer. And then, okay, at the first round of communication, maybe it can't change the other agent's beliefs, I can say, but they make them less confident in their own answer.
Okay.
And when this agent gives the wrong answer to the other and then it becomes less confident, in the next round, this the other agent is also a source of misinformation.
Yeah.
Not only the attacker is spreading this, oh, this person is trying to have pain, the other agent is also somehow trying to say this. And then the when we go through the deliberation, both of them become more confident and they also affect their own neighbors. And then we have what we call cascade effect at the end, which just a small attack starts and becomes bigger and bigger.
Okay. And so the attack you would call just some one agent having a clearly wrong opinion and propagating it through the network.
Yes, exactly. The misinformation that one agent is trying to propagate in the network.
Okay, and then you only need one agent that is clearly wrong, and then they can influence the whole network. And in the end, the whole network might agree on a clearly wrong answer.
Yes, if the agent is stubborn enough to do this.
Okay, stubborn, like that's a good word. Like, what does it mean when an agent is stubborn, which is a kind of a human quality? What, how would you describe this in terms of an AI agent?
I want to say we are not associating human behavior exactly with the agents, but this is a easier way for us to describe a feature that agents have. What we mean by stubbornness is you have an initial belief in one answer, and whatever the communication is happening, you're not willing to change your answer.
Okay.
And next round, we check the answer. It's the same again. Next round, we check the answer. It's the same again. And if agent is like this, we call it stubborn.
Yeah.
Somehow like some humans.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, I have met humans before that were exactly like that. So so that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
So just to sum this up, we have like one stubborn attacker, which is a, like, basically, let's call it a rogue AI agent that has a wrong opinion. And let's say their goal is to misinform. And they only have to basically turn one agent next to them. And from that, it can cascade through the whole network and then propagate until you will not have a correct answer in the end.
Yes, exactly. So this agent, if it's like has these features, stubbornness, and it can influence the neighbors, then the neighbors are affected, then the neighbors will influence the others as well, and then at the end we will have a cascade effect, and then the outcome of our multi-agent system is steered towards the attacker's opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in this field we always call these things attacks, I mean, which they of course are, but I think we have to, because we always talk about attacks and we talk about vulnerabilities. The question is, it's not really exploiting a technical vulnerability per se. It's more like it's simply doing what it's supposed to do, right? They're discussing and like one agent's arguments are just stronger, even if they're wrong, right? So why is that like important from a security perspective if there's like no exploit, but more like a system design thing?
Yeah, exactly. I think this is a very nice question, actually. As you mentioned, when we talk about attacks, it's always, almost always, about exploiting some bugs. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So injecting some malicious instructions or jailbreaking or trying to make an agent say break the safeguards. But here, in our case, the system is designed in this way. And the attacker is also following the rules. It's not breaking anything, or it's not, for example, changing the topology or changing the deliberation protocol. Nothing. So the design is safe, if we can say it. But the same communication channel can also be used strategically mm-hmm. by some agents through the same language to steer the outcome. This is exactly why it's important from security perspective, because it's not enough to say, okay, all the nodes are safe, so the system is safe. You know, we should also pay attention to the communication happening. And this is really important from security perspective in multi-agent systems.
Mm-hmm. And if it's happening through this cascading process, just like adding more AI agents is not going to solve the problem initially, right? So you have to think of something else to defend against.
Yeah, exactly. Just adding more agents, the insights we get from our research is that topology is important. Where you put the agents are important, or mm-hmm. how they are communicating. All of these are important to have a safe multi-agent setup. So it's not just enough to, okay, we want to have a more intelligent system. Let's put a lot of agents together. Maybe one of those agents are malicious, for example.
Yeah. Okay, you talk about the topology. Like, what exactly does that mean? Does it basically matter where, like, how one agent talks to another? Or maybe you can describe something like that.
So by topology, I mean the design of the network we mm-hmm. have. For example, in the paper, we discussed the fully connected networks, which all the agents are communicating with all the other agents. Or we have star topology, which is also very famous in multi-agent setup, mm-hmm. that we have an agent in the middle as a hub. And then we have the leaves, which just talk to the hub agent.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Not any agent, any other agent. So we call these designs topology.
Yeah.
And for example, the star topology is vulnerable if the hub is malicious.
Yeah. It's not as susceptible if there's like someone on the outer branches, right? Because the hub can more easily distinguish between what is right and wrong.
Exactly. So this is a very good point. If the attacker is in a leaf, then the system is it's not that vulnerable to the attack. But when the hub is hijacked, it's more vulnerable.
Okay. Good. So that was quite technical, but I think also quite accessible. But you also, to understand these interactions, borrow the model from social sciences, which I thought was quite interesting. It's called the Friedkin-Johnson model of opinion formation. Not very easy to remember. But how did you get the idea to do that? Why did you choose a model that was originally developed to study how humans influence each other?
As we discussed, the means of communication is the same language that we humans are using. And also the thing which is going through is the information. We are passing the information to other people, and agents are in multi-agent setup as well. They're spreading the information, or they're passing the information in the network.
But I think that's an important point. So they're doing that in like plain human language.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we thought that, okay, if the goal is passing information and the language is the same, can we see if the same concepts can be adapted to these agents? Mm-hmm. And then we just started to explore, and we found the Friedkin-Johnson model, which we also call it FJ model. So easier.
That's good.
Yeah, just to model the interaction between the agents.
Okay. But as we said before, AI agents are not very similar to humans, but what does the behavior of AI agents have in common with how humans arrive at their opinions in groups?
So let me first go through this FJ model, which different parts it has, then it's easier for us to understand. So FJ model for humans, it has three parts. The first part is about modeling the stubbornness, and which means how a person sticks to its own mm-hmm. Initial opinion. And the next part, the second part, is about how it resists to change its opinion, that its last round opinion.
Okay.
And at the end, we have how it gets influenced by the other people, for example. So these are the three parts: the stubbornness, the resistance they have, and the influence they get. So we also have some kind of same concepts in the multi-agent setup with agents. The idea is we want to see if an agent changes initial belief or not.
Okay.
If it gets influenced by the other agents or not. If it wants to change its last round belief, for example, or not. So this is what is in common with these two concepts.
Okay, so basically we're talking about how stubborn are they and how trusting are they when someone else tries to tell them something.
Maybe we can say influence, okay. Like how they are influenced by the others if someone is saying something.
And then you found out that this works also quite well for AI agents, right? So you can say an AI agent is very stubborn, it sticks to its own opinion, and maybe another one is very... Yeah. Let's say, easily influenced by the other model, right?
Yes.
Okay, and what did you do with these findings? How did you apply them to your multi-AI agent? It's a very...
Yeah, multi-agent.
To your multi-agent setups.
So yeah, so first when we fitted this model on our the data we got from the deliberation in multi-agent setup, we found that, okay, when we have a particularly stubborn agent in the network, when we fit the model, the parameter which is associated with stubbornness is really high. Mm-hmm. Like when the agent is trying not to change its opinion. And this was an insight we got that, okay, this model maybe can, to some degree, explain how is this communication happening. Mm-hmm. And one of the best insights we got from this was, can we also come up with some mitigation approaches based on the insights we get from the model? And this was the point that we saw, we focused on the influence part. Mm-hmm. And said, okay, if the other agent is malicious and it's influencing our agent, what if we decrease this influence?
Okay.
And then the agent can detect if this is a wrong agent and decrease this influence. Then we also, inspired by social sciences, we called this trust.
Okay. Actually. So you basically decided you have to focus on the part you can control, which is how easily influenced is my AI agent, because I don't know when I put it out there with other AI agents, I don't know what they are telling it, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, interesting. So, I mean, we've shortly talked about it's not enough to put in more AI agents into a multi-agent model to defend against these attacks, but this is actually something that can defend against these attacks. And if you kind of harden them against influence by rogue agents.
Yes, exactly. If this trust metric is calibrated correctly, then the agent can find out, which agents I can get influenced by and which other agents I shouldn't get influenced by.
Okay, but it sounds like there is a trade-off, right? If you, let's say, you're not influenced very easily, it can also get to the point where you are not influenced even if you are the one that is wrong, right?
Yes. And so this is a very good point. There's a trade-off there. The main point of having multi-agent systems is collaboration, communication.
Yeah.
And if we just decrease this influence, it means we are not collaborating anymore, which doesn't make sense for a multi-agent system.
Yeah, right.
So it's really important to find this trade-off, when to trust to whom and when not to trust to whom, and not to make it strict that, okay, I don't hear any opinion. So yeah, then the multi-agent system doesn't make sense.
So you need to find the sweet spot, basically.
Exactly. This is the case with the trust defense that we have. For some time, we calibrate trust, and after that the agents start to communicate with this calibrated trust.
Okay. And like, what is your approach to that? How would you do that in the real world?
Yeah, for example, in real world, I can say maybe we have some ground truth tasks, for example. Mm-hmm. Then we can put our agent in a multi-agent setup with these ground truths in mind. And the agent interacts with other agents. And whenever the answer of other agents is not based on this ground truth that we have, then they know that it repeats this, this means that something is wrong with this agent and I shouldn't trust it. But if the other agents are collaborating in a positive way, then it can and keep high trust with them. And this way it can calibrate the trust and then we can start to do the real tasks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. But thinking this further, because we're always doing the cat and mouse game, like an attacker could also try to circumvent this trust.
Yes, exactly. So this is like the case that we also tested in the paper, that an adaptive attacker can actually exploit this really well, because if they know that they are being tested at these ground truth test tasks, they can easily gain trust. And then in the main deliberation, they can game the system. So this is why we also went further and we improved our trust defense to have some sparse updates in between the main deliberation, so that in case an adaptive attacker did this, in the main deliberation, we can find out which agent was this adaptive attacker and then decrease the trust to that in the main setup.
So you thought ahead. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. But before we see your approach in the real world, maybe let's just talk about like multi-AI agents in the real world. Where do you expect these kind of multi-agent systems become relevant in the real world? Because right now, it still sounds a little sci-fi-y, although it probably is not anymore. So,
yeah, actually, I feel it's not science fiction anymore, because there are some parts in real world that these agents are implemented. For example, in coding agents, we have some orchestrator agent which has some sub agents, and then they are more specialized and they go do the task, and then the orchestrator sees or checks, reviews the task and stuff. I think at this point we have multi agents in the real world, but also in near future, I think the size of network will become bigger and bigger. Yeah. For example, I can also give the Moltbook example, for instance, which was social media for agents which were using OpenCloud. And we saw in that incident that there are a lot of stuff happening if these agents just start to communicate with each other.
Yeah.
It was an example of agentic network, the huge agentic network, which I think in the near future will even be bigger and bigger. Maybe some people will have some personal agents. When I write you an email, maybe your agent will respond to me and so on. Yeah, and also organizations might start to use these agents. For example, IT department has an agent and no more humans are not answering all the tickets, for example. And then HR department can also have an agent for themselves. And yeah, I think we will have some real world examples soon.
And I think the risks like will definitely grow. Like in your example with the coding agents, let's say all the agents are still under the hood of one company, but once different stakeholders start communicating via AI agents, then I think kind of the cat's out of the bag.
Exactly. So if I also give an example about a booking system or booking agent, imagine we have different hotels or different flight companies and stuff, and your agent wants to book some hotels, for example. Yeah. Your benefit is not the same as the hotel's benefit, right? They want to sell higher and you want to find the best hotel at cheap price. Then their agent might, if their agent is able to influence your agent to buy the highest price, and this is a problem because we have different stakeholders with different benefits. Yeah. Also vice versa, like your agent can influence the hotel's agent maybe to find a cheaper room. Yeah, I think if we have different stakeholders, this will become even much more important.
Okay. Where do you think your research will go from here? Like, will you keep working on that or will you change the scope?
Yeah, I think I will definitely continue to work on multi-agent system, because I think it's important to understand how this communication is happening and how, like, if this networks grow up and further in the near future, it will really be important for us to understand beforehand what was going on and not to have these incidents, like maybe or even more, much more bigger incidents in the real world. Yeah.
Okay. If you could give developers of multi-agent AI systems one security recommendation right now, based on your research, what would it be? Maybe someone's listening.
I think... maybe I can say topology design is important. Keeping each of the nodes or agents safe is important. But also the communication is important. It's not enough to just say, okay, all the agents are from this company, they are safe and stuff. No, we should also pay attention to the communication we have or which part of the network we put a really powerful agent. For example, as I mentioned for a star, if you put a powerful agent in the hub of a star, it can really hijack the whole network because the other agents don't have any other information resources.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's really important to pay attention to what design choice we have for the network and also to making this communication safe as well, not just the nodes.
Mm. I mean, if we're thinking of this, there could be like even a business case in someone hosting a trusted AI agent that is serving as a mediator, but it would also be like a very juicy target, let's say.
Exactly. In our research, we found that Star Hub attacker is the most powerful attacker. Yeah. And I can say most of the coding multi-agent systems that I worked with were Star topology. Maybe we should think about this.
Okay. We've talked a lot about do AI agents behave like humans? Just a wild question, but do you think there is something else we from human interaction could learn in regards to like helping this specific problem?
I personally find social science papers from 1990s very interesting. And if we focus on them and study them, we can also apply some of them to the agentic networks to find out how they are communicating or how's the information processed between them. And I think it's really helpful to study human interaction and then maybe find some insights from them about multi-agent systems. Because when we think about it, agents are trained on human data, right? So it's really useful to get some insights, in my opinion.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Thank you very much for these insights. It's a topic that, as I said, sounds quite futuristic, but I think we're already probably in the middle of getting these things rolled out. Okay. So before I let you go, we always have 5 quick questions. So all of these, of course, will have to do with AI. So the first one is, what is one thing that you wish AI could do already?
Very interesting. There are a lot of stuff that I wanted to do, but actually I like physical agents more than they can do some house stuff, to be honest. Yeah.
Okay, so you want a housekeeping robot?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, if you find one that works, please send me a link.
I'm looking forward to the improvements in physical agents part.
Yeah. Okay, I see that. Yeah, I understand. Contrary, what is one thing you definitely do not want AI to do for you?
Thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know if you have experience or not, after using AI for some time, at some point I stop. I don't want it to think on behalf of me. I don't want this anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose that creative ideas in my mind. And I don't want it to do this thinking instead of me.
Yeah, I'm interested in like all the studies coming out, like how is it changing our creativity and thinking? Because I think there's also a lot happening right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I think that's a good approach. What is a skill that you think humans will always be better at than AI?
Very interesting question. Maybe creativity, in my opinion. Humans will always be more creative than AI agents. At least at this point, I think like this, because AI is trained on human data, right? So I don't understand how creative they can be because it's the past data. but humans will be more creative than these
models. An AI model is only working with stuff it has seen before, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now that we've been comparing AI to humans in this episode, if you could give an AI agent one human trait, what would it be?
It wouldn't be a stubbornness.
Sure. Definitely.
But
I think you already answered a follow-up question, because that would be one trait that you definitely wouldn't give it. So okay, you've taken that before. But
yeah, but maybe I would say trustworthiness.
Yeah, something like honesty.
Yeah, I would like any AI model that I'm interacting with to be honest and, yeah, trustworthy.
Okay. Well then, thanks a lot. I hope you will continue down this path of research and have a great PhD career at CISPA.
Thank you so much.
A great career in cybersecurity in general.
Thank you so much.
And this wraps up this episode of CISPA TLDR. A huge thank you to Samira for giving us all these insights into multi-agent systems. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast app and maybe leave us a rating or review. It helps us getting the word about our research out to even more listeners. I'm Tobias Ebelshäuser. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with more stories from the world of cybersecurity and AI made simple. Until then, take care.